Hello and welcome to The Sopranos Show. I'm Gavin Bowen.
And I'm Hannibal Diaz.
And today we will be discussing the season 5 premiere of The Sopranos titled Two Tonys. This episode aired March 7th, 2004. The episode was written by David Chase and Terrence Winter, and it was directed by Tim Van Patten. Here's the HBO synopsis for the season 5 premiere. In the season 5 premiere, a flood of organized crime parolees changes the landscape of the Soprano-Lupertazzi alliance. Meanwhile, Janice carries on the family's Sunday dinner tradition. Carmela and AJ commune with local wildlife. Christopher balks at footing the bill on Gumar night. And Tony tries to introduce Dr. Melfi to his other self. All right. Season 5 premiere.
Two Tonys. You could use that as an alternate title for the series in a way, couldn't you?
Yeah, I actually felt like we were going to get a different meaning behind that title. What with, as we see in this episode, Steve Buscemi is going to be appearing as a character, Tony Blundetto.
Right.
Two Tonys.
Exactly. Yeah, so there is a double meaning to the Two Tonys title in this episode.
I think there are a couple, I would say.
For sure. Well, quadruple meaning?
A quadruple meaning.
Is it
almost
squared? I don't really know how.
It could be squared.
Okay.
It could be squared. Well, we could start off with the opening scene. An opening scene for our premieres is usually Tony walking down the driveway picking up the paper. But obviously, Carmela and Tony are estranged, so we just get an empty driveway. We get a pretty empty house. This montage of the house is pretty lonely with the song Heaven Only Knows playing in the background.
Yeah, we get a little emphasis on places that Tony used to occupy. Pool is covered, so it's like fall, winter time. We get the barbecue. Obviously, no one's using it, but it's sitting there, and that was, you know, Tony's station of sorts. That was his territory. And yeah, that camera move, you know, they kind of poke fun at their traditional opening of Tony picking up the paper by having the camera pull down the driveway just, you know, empty through empty space and landing on the paper, which Meadow then drives
unceremoniously right over to pick up AJ.
Right.
So this is the new
status quo, I guess.
Yeah, the status quo.
Yeah.
Well, and then from there, we move to the Sunday dinner that the synopsis does mention. Actually, a lot of information in this scene.
Oh, yeah.
A ton of information. Yeah. Because time has passed since Whitecaps, it's been almost a year and a half.
Right.
A long time. And last week, we spoke to Frank Renzulli. Check out that episode if you haven't already. But Frank does talk about how he got a little impatient with the time it took between episodes.
Yeah.
And seasons. And this is a clear example. This took a long time.
I thought it was great when he said that, too. Because, I mean, frustrating for someone who actually worked on the show is really funny. Because it was so frustrating for people who were actually fans of the show back then. Like, I first really got into The Sopranos in the gap between season 5 and season 6, actually. So my wait wasn't exactly the wait that, like, actual fans had at the time. But still, I mean, that's significant. And then there was a significant gap between seasons 5 and season 6. So, yeah, it was just this whole thing about The Sopranos that is now totally forgotten.
Yeah.
But it was like an issue back then. Like, Jesus, when's the show going to come back?
I like that you say Sopranos now because Frank Renzulli says Sopranos.
Here's another thing, too. I noticed in this episode, Tony says Tony Soprano. So I got to say Tony Soprano and Sopranos from now on.
All right. That's fine. But the show is called The Soprano Show.
That's true.
we'll leave that.
Let's leave it. Yeah. Yeah.
So we get some highlights here. Key actors that are going to be joining the cast. Frank Vincent playing Phil Leotardo for New York. And Robert, is it Loggia? Loggia?
I don't know how you say it exactly. Yeah, we'll have to look that up. Loggia? Loggia? Yeah.
Well, he's playing Feach LaManna.
Right.
A character name from the mind of Renzulli.
Yes.
And Steve Buscemi, as we mentioned, as Tony Blundetto, Tony's Soprano's cousin.
I love this device. Yeah, I mean, it's such a cool idea to just have this like dump of old gangsters, you know, infuse the show with new blood.
And great really actors too.
Yeah, great actors. Yeah, and it's just exciting because we don't meet all of them quite yet.
True. And speaking of new actors, I don't know if you caught this, but the girl who plays Sophia, Bobby's daughter,
yeah,
completely different actress from last season.
Oh, really? Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. They do that a lot with like younger kids, especially when they're kind of like insignificant characters. But
wow.
Sorry, Sophia.
No, it's true.
I did not notice, but yeah, that's actually really funny. And here's another little fun bit of trivia. And the only reason I know this is just because I watched Mad Men.
Okay.
The news reporter who is introducing the class of 04, as they're called, Phil Leotardo, et cetera,
yeah,
is played by Matthew Weiner, the writer who joined Sopranos. I'm gonna call the title Sopranos.
Okay.
And then when it's the actual character, I'm gonna say Soprano.
Fine.
That's the new rule.
That's what we'll do.
But anyway, Matthew Weiner plays the reporter talking about Phil Leotardo and Tony Blundetto,
right,
and all of them. He's a writer. He joined the show season 5, went on to create and show run Mad Men.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, good piece of trivia there. That's interesting how Terrence Winter and him almost have similar ways of like introducing themselves to the show.
They, right,
these weird cameos.
Yeah.
So a lot of more information in this scene. Oh, well, obviously Tony and Janice, you know, going at it,
mm-hmm,
but it reveals information. Janice says, "This is my house."
Right.
Okay. So she's moved in. Not only is she moved in, but once Meadow and AJ arrive and they're getting dinner ready, she says she's lost her wedding ring.
Yeah.
Well, Okay, then we didn't need to cover it in any specific episode, but Janice and Bobby have married.
Yeah, they got married between season 4 and 5.
That was, yeah, fast.
Yeah, I love that. That's one thing that I like about the show a lot, is that there are things that happen between seasons, mm-hmm, you know, and even between episodes that are significant, and you're like, oh, we just got a little bit of a time jump. We're not really going to mention it or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, that was always a really cool thing that this show did. And then also maybe a little bit of symbolism in the fact that the scene ends with Janice rooting through the trash for her wedding ring. And,
right,
as we know, Tony's marriage is a bit in the trash.
Oh, yeah.
So there you go.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Well, Camarilla is not at this dinner.
Nope.
And we cut to her arriving home. AJ's already home after the dinner. And he's applying himself to drums, which is kind of nice to see AJ actually seemingly doing well in something.
Mm-hmm.
Carmella comes in, asks about the dinner. He's not willing to talk about it that much. She asks if he brought something in from the garage. He didn't. And she's trying to give him this sing song.
It's so nice to have a man around the house.
I should have thought about that before.
What did you say?
Yeah, so he's clearly resenting her. He's, as we kind of talked about, it seems that he's, you know, kind of taking his dad's side, which I guess is understandable. He identifies with his dad.
Right.
Just being who AJ is. He doesn't know all the details of why Tony and Carmella are separated, so he probably just assumes that his mom is being too hard on Tony, and he just doesn't like it and thinks that she should lighten up.
Yeah, but you do get this moment of, is he even going to listen to Carmella?
Right.
Is he even going to take her orders? And he does. Very difficult for him to get up to do it, but he, mm-hmm, does listen to her.
Yeah.
She gives him that forceful tone that's just enough to get him to go outside. But moments later, things are escalated even more as he's confronted by a bear,
yeah,
in the backyard and seemingly regresses into screaming for his mommy.
Right.
Which I never think. In that situation, I don't think I would call out for my mommy. It's always been mom.
Yeah.
For me. Don't think I've ever used mommy.
I agree. I mean, I think that it's kind of an exaggerated sort of joke payoff, especially because in the previous scene,
mm-hmm,
he was so tough and he was staring Carmella down.
Yeah.
And he was really asserting himself, you know, and basically, you know, fuck you, mom, was kind of his attitude. I'll do what I want.
Yeah.
And now he's out there desperately crying for literally his mommy. So,
right,
now he's just like a little wimpy baby and he needs Carmella to rescue him. So, well, he's getting his comeuppance in a, yeah, way.
Well, it is a bear.
Yes.
That's true. Yeah.
A giant bear, too.
It is a giant bear.
Yeah.
A giant black bear. We get a little interlude here in between. Tony is with Valentina.
Right.
They're still at it. Valentina is still quite annoying.
Yeah.
But cut back to the bear, right? Carmela gets rid of the bear.
Mm-hmm.
Bear goes away. And she calls in these rangers who come by to look for the bear, any signs of it. They say there's not much they can do. Carmela and mm-hmm. this one ranger kind of give each other a little looky look.
Bit of a moment there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bit of a moment. And AJ's wondering why she's not going to tell Tony. She's just not going to.
Right, yeah.
She's going to try to be as independent as possible.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. the key bit of information here, for sure.
Yeah. But we go back to Tony and Valentina, and we get this very funny moment here where she's scrolling through the television and lands on Prince of Tides.
Yeah.
Which there are very funny similarities between Nick Nolte and Barbara Streisand, and in this case, our characters, Tony Soprano and...
Yeah.
Dr. Melfi.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's funny that, like, Tony is that excited.
He's
right
very
away.
Excited.
I mean, he's sort of, I think you can sort of see what this is going to prompt him to do, because we've already established that Tony is maybe a little bit bored with Valentina. Or it's not that, like, he doesn't find her attractive. I mean, she's still hot. He still enjoys sleeping with her.
Right.
But she doesn't stimulate him intellectually mm-hmm. the way that he got stimulated intellectually by maybe Melfi. And yeah, I mean, just the little clips that they add in here from Prince of Tides, you know, Streisand saying, "So you feel that your mother betrayed you."
Right.
It's like, that's very on the nose.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, all that stuff is great. But
also Nick Nolte yeah. just like leaving in a rage and slamming right. the door behind
exactly.
him.
Exactly.
We've seen that before, too.
We sure have. So, yeah, this is definitely going to direct Tony maybe down a certain road for this episode.
Well, literally in the next scene,
yeah.
Melfi gets a knock at her door, and there's a giant bouquet of flowers and Tide detergent.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely felt with the card and everything, you know, thinking of you, your Prince of Tides or whatever it said, it was very Joker. S like something, you know, you expect the Joker to leave somebody he's in love with.
Yeah,
very sociopathic, maybe.
Right,
it's very creepy.
Yeah. That's so funny. I never even thought about it that way, but yeah, definitely weird.
Right.
Definitely
like in Tim Burton's Batman,
exactly,
when she opens up the box and just this
yeah.
hand pops out with dead flowers.
No, you're totally right. You're totally right. Yeah, I'm picturing Jack Nicholson now, and I'm likening him to Tony, and that's great. But yeah, we don't really get much of a response from Melfi,
sure.
but we can kind of sense that she probably knows, you know,
oh, yeah.
who this came from. And, you know, season 5 premiere. So I like how we just kind of gradually and casually reintroduce our characters for this season.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really fun scene. We're in the Bing, and Polly and Chris are regaling Vito and Patsy and eventually Benny with the tale of losing the Russian in the snow.
Right.
And they're just kind of talking about it, you know, fun, joking, you know, this is Pine Barrens kind of getting recapped. So that's just like a great, you know, reference, mm-hmm. right?
They are embellishing
yes.
just a tad bit. I mean, when CRISPR says,
"We lead him through the snow, this asshole's shivering. I mean, he's wearing fucking pajamas and slippers in like 8-degree weather."
Well, he wasn't really shivering, was he?
Yeah.
He says he washes his balls with ice water.
Right, yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, this is just great because it's a event that, you know, in the lives of the characters happened a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're just kind of telling the story.
Right.
So it's great. And of course, it's fun for the fans because this is a lot of people's favorite episode, right? Pine Barrens.
Right. And it's also a Tim Van Patten story, and he's directing this episode
True.
As he directed Pine Barrens as well.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
interesting.
Great point. But of course, it wouldn't be The Sopranos if things didn't devolve
right.
into conflict, because this starts our Chris versus Polly storyline, because Chris, you know, basically correctly blames Polly for
yep.
the entire issue
right.
With the Russian. Polly, of course, resents that.
Yes.
And then because they're both gangsters, it very quickly nearly comes to blows.
Well, let's make the point here that in our interview with Frank Renzulli, he did say how he did not like in the very second episode of the series how Polly was making comments about Christopher's mother giving blowjobs. That
right.
that's something you just did not do, because Christopher is a capable guy. He's killed before. If you make these kind of comments, the grudge he will hold once he does become a made guy. And we're kind of seeing it play out right here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is exactly what you would have expected from Frank's point of view.
Yes.
Christopher has no reason to really appreciate Pauly throughout his entire series.
Right.
For his comments.
Yeah.
So whenever it does come to blows, it's very serious.
I think that in general, right, we're, what, 5 years into the show mm-hmm. now. So the Chris of this episode two Tonys is very different from the Chris that we met in the premiere when he was running around with Brendan Filoni and like right. just their silly little stick ups. And, you know, Chris gets his first kill in the first episode of The Sopranos.
Mm-hmm.
My point is he's very much the like kid yeah. in those early episodes. And that's a status that's kind of like sort of outgrown at this point. Mm-hmm. So he's like, okay, yeah. I mean, I'm still technically, I guess, kind of the youngest guy of like the upper management, but I am tired of being treated like a kid. And so that's mm-hmm. really, and you can see it in Michael Imperioli too. Like he doesn't really look like a super young guy anymore. He is like kind of maturing, right?
Yeah.
So he's just over it.
Yeah.
And Pauly very much wants to put him in that junior role.
Yeah.
So, of course, the two guys, they have to be separated by the rest of the guys. Chris storms out. And then Pauly, with this pretty key dramatic line, you know, it's over between us or whatever it is he says, basically declaring their friendship over. So that's yeah. kind of a big deal.
That is intense. Tony had walked into the scene. He said he had to make a call
right.
in the other room. Well, we get that right here in this next scene. Tony calls Melfi to ask her out to dinner.
Mm-hmm.
He's being very straightforward here. I mean, it's been a while since we've seen the Tony attracted to Melfi side of things. And of course she has to decline to, but with Tony's persistence here, it's very unusual. Like we haven't really seen this, mm-hmm. like him aggressively having to go after another woman. But he says here,
"No, I'm not undeterred by this. We will talk again.
Thank you for the flowers.
And the detergent.
And the detergent. Of course, what's wrong with me?
I don't know, but we'll find out. Leave it to Dr. Tony."
Those are moves that we have not seen Tony have to put on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he really is aiming for Melfi.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of surprised that it took him this long. I mean, I'm not sure exactly how much time has taken place between Whitecaps and Two Tonys, but you know, it's a significant amount of time.
Yeah,
we can surmise. But yeah, I guess just Prince of Tides, Nick Nolte, reminded Tony that he'd always kind of wanted to sleep with Melfi, and now there's no reason why he can't.
Yeah,
so it is kind of a natural thing for Tony to want to pursue, and
that's
because
right.
he's Tony, he's going to pursue it in a way different than a lot of people would. So that giant black bear returns.
Yes.
And he's walking through the backyard and he just kind of passes through.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other bear enters the picture.
Okay. Yeah.
Tony himself. And he's basically at the house to deliver Carmela's allowance, but he overhears her talking to the Rangers. And of course, he's like, what the fuck?
Right.
And so, you know, once she gets off the phone, they start talking about the issue. And Tony's going to stick around until the Rangers can arrive.
Right. It's interesting that you mentioned the other bear arriving, because
yeah.
I don't know if it might have been you. I heard this from somewhere else. So this isn't original.
Right.
But it might have been you a long time ago when we were talking about this episode that the giant black bear
mm-hmm.
is only present when Tony is not around,
mm-hmm.
but is a presence still at the Soprano household that is a reminder to Carmela of Tony, like
yeah.
a big brooding animal. Well, the actual big brooding guy is not at the house anymore. So this black bear, this second Tony, if you will, has now emerged.
Right.
And is still kind of like stalking and threatening the house.
Exactly. So there are two distinct two Tonys that we can talk about
right.
in this episode. First, of course, the mention of Tony Blundetto, Steve Buscemi's character,
mm-hmm.
Tony Soprano. two Tonys. That's pretty obvious.
Right.
And then you could say this bear
right.
is one Tony. And then our real Tony is the other Tony. And then there's a third two Tonys reference that we'll get to towards the end of this episode.
Right.
And having said all of that, I believe that David Chase just flat out said in an interview that the bear is symbolic of Tony. So there you go.
Oh, okay. Maybe yeah. Okay. There you go. Yeah. yeah. But Tony is concerned that Carmela didn't tell him, and the Rangers do end up arriving. They all take a look around, can't find the presence of the bear. Tony notices another looky-loo that the Ranger and Carmela give each other and decides to, you know, flex his manhood, I guess, with
exactly
with cash.
Yeah.
That he's waving in this guy's face, like, yeah. here, for your whistles. Right. Like, we don't have whistles. And, of course, Tony has to make a comment that the guy must be gay.
Yeah, exactly. Ranger Rick, a little light in the Timberlands.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, exactly as you said. I mean, I think it's funny, too, because an entire season of under his nose subtle flirtation went on between Carmela and another man.
Oh, sure.
Which he never picked up on in the slightest.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, he's separated now, but he's like, his antenna is up, you know, he's right. extra alert. Anytime a man interacts with Carmela, now he's like, you know,
right.
definitely in a heightened state.
Yeah. Yeah. So they head back inside to fight about money.
Right.
I mean, this is the first time we've seen the two together since Whitecaps, right?
Yeah.
So he's giving her an allowance. She still is on an allowance.
Mm-hmm.
He knows he kind of has to do that because they're separated. They're not divorced. But a lot comes up in this moment. One thing, the mention of the coffee pot not tasting good.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one little thing.
Yes.
But he is, you know, in Carmela's words, trying to make it financially difficult for her.
Sure.
And he kind of has a good comeback that for all the belief that she has in Catholicism, he holds one thing close, which is no divorce.
Mm-hmm.
So that catches her off guard. That is definitely something for her. She understands, and we see her in her face, and she's committing a sin.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what else is interesting? This whole scene is just kind of like the state of Tony and Carmela. You know, we're kind of catching up on them since they've had that big separation.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, liked the callback to Whitecaps when they had that huge standoff over the fridge of him opening it and her shutting it, and
yeah.
and then we get that, you know, he pulls open the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
Carmela doesn't make a huge issue of it, but it clearly, she doesn't even say anything,
just
but
staring.
It's clearly a big moment yeah. for her. She really doesn't like it. And then, of course, you know, to add emphasis on him sort of just laying claim to territory that really is no longer his, he drinks orange juice direct from the carton,
yeah,
you know, and then puts it back. So
yeah.
it's all very like, and it's all very weighted, you yeah. know, every action and counteraction, you know.
Right. And I made the comment about the coffee pot because mm-hmm. I would have saved this for my favorite line, but mm-hmm. it's so important that we get this interaction in right
yeah.
now because it is too good.
Right.
It's just all this lead up to the mention of Furio.
Even if my wife was going after some fucking immigrant.
Yet you are modern enough to use a cell phone to call Italy and every other fucking place to threaten the guy's life.
Well, that's right. Certain people see him. He's a dead man.
He had coffee here, Tony. That's all.
And that a coffee maker sucks. How you like them apples?
So good.
Yeah.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
It's just yeah. like,
Yeah, even if my wife was going after a fucking immigrant.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like a really good end to the scene.
Yep.
And then briefly get a little moment here of Melfi picking up her phone to a voicemail of Tony saying, you know what? Forget the dinner. I think I just need to come back to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, whether or not she believes that in that moment, we will see.
Exactly.
But on to the introduction of Feach LaManna.
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, this actor always just reminds me of Scarface.
Right.
Can't not think of that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. He's so great in that movie.
Yeah, he really is. Tony comes in the middle of a Feach story, which Tony kind of comments that when is he not in a story?
Mm-hmm.
which all the characters kind of take note in that. Yeah. Okay. Feach is a storytelling kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he gets into this story of how you set a precedent in the can.
Yeah.
And yeah, Feach is a psycho.
Yeah.
Right. He's a fucking psychopath.
Yeah. Classic situation. Start a fight with the biggest, toughest guy there. So you get respect.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, just to remind everyone who Feach LaMotta is, this is a character that has been referenced going back to the first or second season of the show. And then we really got the story in third season of who he was. Basically, Tony got a gang together of his closest friends at the time. They robbed Feach LaMotta's card game, and then they gave the money back and no one was hurt, but it established that Tony was worthy of respect, that he, in a sense, was a bit of a capable guy, even though, there was no murder associated with that robbery. But still, it was like, okay, we got to take Tony seriously. And yeah, it's cool that like Feach LaMotta is here now.
Yeah.
This guy who's had this huge kind of unseen presence in the Sopranoverse up to this point.
Yeah. I also too like in this moment how Tony and Junior, they just have this understanding, like whether or not people understand that Tony is fully boss now, or they still respect Junior in some way. Tony and Junior are like, okay, I mean, Feach wants to talk to both of us about getting back in the game. That's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Like none of these two men don't have a grudge against each other anymore about like, I'm boss, why are you talking to him?
Right.
Or like Junior saying the same thing. It doesn't even run. They just look at each other like, all right, we can give Feach something.
Yeah. And I think that too, Junior, just in the way that Dominique Chianese plays Junior, starting with this episode, he kind of plays him as like a significantly older version.
Yeah.
You know, he had been through so much with the cancer, with the trial. And so now you get the sense that Junior's just kind of calmer and like doesn't really want to get that hyper involved in anything really. Like he sort of fought his battles. He kind of just wants peace now. He just wants to relax.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. The last button on this scene is everybody knows about the bear now, apparently, because Feach knows.
Mm-hmm.
And we know who told him because Bobby's like, what?
Right, yeah. Which
good,
is great.
Yeah, it's a good button.
But yeah, I mean, it is kind of a big deal, I guess, too, just that, like, the boss and his wife are separated.
Right.
So that is going to be a topic of discussion amongst everyone.
Yeah. So we lead into Christopher and Adriana. Christopher getting ready to head out, playing the low man tonight, meaning he's going to have to pay for everybody at the table. And then Adriana getting a little Lady Macbeth, I would say, with her kind of planting in his mind, you shouldn't have to pay all the time. Also, her trying to dig in information about who might be there.
Yeah.
Like, that's significant, but...
Right.
So she's working for the FBI.
She is, yeah. And, you know, asking questions that she knows, if she gets answers to them, won't necessarily get anyone in trouble.
Right.
I mean, although... Yeah, maybe the feds could like try and wire that place or whatever. I mean, I don't know. She just needs to be able to give the feds something. So, yeah, she's definitely asking these questions. And, you know, Chris is kind of wondering why she wants to know so much. But he's not like seriously suspicious of it or anything.
Yeah, no.
But this is a classic thing that happens in relationships between two people, you know, where one person says to the other, hey, it doesn't seem like you're quite getting like the respect you deserve. You know, maybe you should do something like that. And, you know, Chris can't deny it.
Right. Yeah, no, he can't. Before, as HBO called it, Gumar Night, which I thought was so stupid of HBO to call it that. But Tony sends Benny over to the house because although Tony can't be there, at least somebody needs to be stationed in the backyard to watch out for this bear. And I love that we get an emphasis on this hand grenade that's in the armory of the Soprano house. It's just a fucking hand grenade.
Tony is literally ready for war.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I mean, Scarface.
And, say hello to my little friend.
Yeah, just in case a Scarface situation happens where his house is stormed, well, he's got grenades at the ready.
He's got a grenade.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But I think that this is interesting because it goes back to that scene with Feech where, you know, Feech wasn't really like accusing Tony of anything or trying to shame Tony, but Tony felt sort of implicitly shamed by the fact that, you know, hey, are the guys thinking that I'm not doing enough to kind of, in my masculine role, protect Carmela, even though I don't live there anymore. So he's like, all right, there will be a man at the house.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point. So from there, we do get Gumar Night.
Yeah.
Get a classic, like, memorable line here, interaction.
Yeah.
Between Christopher and Polly, right off the top.
As far as fucking bears are concerned, I say get rid of them all. They had their turn, and now we got ours. That's why dinosaurs don't exist no more.
Wasn't it a meteor?
They're all meat eaters.
Meteor. Meteor.
Take it easy.
Yeah, it reminded me actually of a situation with Polly in Pine Barrens.
Yeah.
When they're driving away from the woods and Tony gets annoyed at Polly. He goes, mayonnaise, mayonnaise.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly, that's very similar, yeah.
Right.
It's really funny with Polly. But yeah, it's Chris just straight up tells Polly, you get it.
Yeah, Chris is stewing, and, you know, Adriana's in his head, of course, and, you know, he already had the altercation with Polly earlier, so he definitely kind of wants to assert himself a bit here, and so that's what he does. Pulling, you know, second week in a row, we're going to reference Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh.
But this literally was a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode, too.
Really?
Where Larry kept going out to dinner with this other couple. It was like Larry and Cheryl and this other couple, and every time the check came, the other guy would suddenly not be around. He suddenly had to go to the bathroom or make a call or something.
Do I have to add another curb?
Yes, you do.
Okay.
Go get it.
All right, sounds good.
At least they pick up a check every now and then.
What the hell does that mean?
What? Does it mean? Yeah. I know what you do.
What?
Every time the check comes, you run off to the bathroom. You don't think I see that?
Oh, fuck you.
Yeah. Honey,
what, you don't think I know about that bathroom trick?
I invented
that bathroom trick.
Hell.
The bathroom trick. I got a problem, a medical problem.
You got a problem. You got a problem paying money.
Well, it's so funny, this scene, too, because it continued. The conversation about dinosaurs continues from here.
Right.
And it's so fucking stupid. It's like they got the stupidest people together to talk about bears. And because, like, oh, they can't run downhill. Oh, it's the moss. Oh, they tack you on your period. This is a collection of the dumbest people about bears.
This ignorance just going back and forth.
Seriously.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Crazy. But in the end, Polly does pay.
Right.
Christopher has, you know, sees that Polly is going to pay. He feels bad about it or whatever. Polly's like, no. I got it. Well.
Clearly very angry about it.
Clearly. Because in the next scene, he drives up on Christopher and says, you owe me or it's going to be points.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Their relationship.
It's going downhill. Yeah. Lunch at the golf course in our next scene. And we get our New York guys, Johnny Sack,
yep,
Carmine Sr., the boss, and one of our Class of 04 characters, Angelo.
Yeah.
And he was the New York consigliere.
That's right.
All right. So, yeah, he's back in the game. And
if you're not right, somebody will correct us.
Yeah. Okay.
Although we're not live right now, we're not going to look it up. So
right.
Continue.
But yeah, so they're all just, you know, having lunch. Very quickly, it becomes apparent that Carmine has a bit of an issue. Talks about burning hair, which no one else smells,
right?
Which is sort of a warning sign.
Mm-hmm.
And then he begins to kind of choke and convulse and eventually collapses.
Right.
Very dire situation.
Things seem to be good too. Like all the relations, you know, from last season's, you know, tension, you know, they're playing golf, they're enjoying life. And then Carmine suffers a stroke leading to the hospital, where a somewhat pleased Johnny Sack is sitting there thinking about, obviously, he's going to be taking the reins soon. That's how he feels.
Of course.
And he's reminding Tony, you know, I will be taking the reins soon. And remember that moment that you stood me up and declined on killing Carmine? Yeah, I haven't forgot that. And Tony's just like, again, killing a boss. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it. That tension is there, and that's a little worrisome, but also, dude, the guy just had a stroke. Like, give him a moment.
Right.
Let him try to die first before you start thinking about taking over.
Well, yeah, Johnny is hungry to be the boss of New York. So, yeah, we're definitely going to have to keep an eye on that, see how that progresses.
Yeah.
And then, of course, just little details that he called Little Carmine to inform him.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Of the fact that Carmine had a stroke. And, of course, Little Carmine is doing what he does, reclining.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
He is. In my notes, every time I write, like, Little Polly, Little Carmine, I put Little.
Yeah.
Little.
Oh, like L-I-L. Like he's a rapper.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. This is Little Carmine.
Yeah. I like that. And then the drive home from the hospital, I assume.
Yeah.
Benny is chauffeuring Tony, and Tony is inquiring about Carmela's activities, and basically the takeaway is that there is no sign that Carmela has a new man, so Tony is quite pleased with himself.
Right.
And then, with that situation.
Yeah. And then somebody's having sex in the next scene.
Oh, yeah.
And then we see it's Tony and Melfi.
Right.
And we're like, well, Tony's having a dream again. No, 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 no. Alarm goes off, and it's Melfi who's having the sex dream.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Right? The plot thickens.
Yes, it does. That leads us right into the next scene. Tony's not there for therapy, as he is dressed in a very nice suit, ready to take her out in this very instant. I love that he says, I'm here in a positive way to ask you out with me. Well, you're kind of, you lied. You manipulated the situation. This is not a positive way.
Yeah.
Melfi knows that.
It's a little creepy.
Right.
To, in this underhanded way, pursue a date with a woman. I love Tony's costume. It's just so over the top.
It really is. I don't know. He's like half, like, Dumb and Dumber, half, you know, it's just like half, I don't know, like he should be back at the racetrack or something.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, he's going in this very over the top direction of trying to present himself as respectable, because of course, as we'll get, as we, you know, go through this episode, Tony understands what he's up against. He understands that she perhaps has some perceptions of him that are not to his advantage.
Right.
And so he's trying to say, like, no, I'm not those other things. Like, look at my suit.
Right.
I'm presentable.
Yeah.
I'm classy.
'Cause, like,
I'm a gentleman.
Unlike other women that you meet or you want to date, they don't already know all of your deepest, darkest feelings and thoughts.
Yeah.
That just doesn't happen.
Exactly.
And Melfi does. Yeah, but we get this, like, real honesty pursuit that Tony is looking for. He's desperate for her honesty. She just doesn't want to give it at this moment, but she's very much, you know, we can't date. It just can't happen. But I love Gandolfini here.
Yeah.
Because it's all about his eyes.
Right.
And I've heard this said before about him. And in this scene, it's truly just he is doing all the acting right now through his eyes. When he talks about he wants her skin, her lips, his eyes are wide open. I mean, he is desperate for some Melfi.
Oh, yeah.
You got to feel that in his forcefulness of literally forcing himself on her, you got to think that Melfi is not traumatized, but feeling the trauma of having a man on top of her like that again, against her will.
Yeah.
Is a little, like, for me, I was like, ooh.
Because she was raped. Yeah.
Right. Not good.
That's funny. You know, I actually didn't think about that during that scene, even though it's perfectly valid, you know, and it's true. Obviously, that's the thing that happened to Melfi, and why wouldn't it run through her head in that moment? I mean, I think that I was kind of likening it just to, you know, obviously, like, present day kind of hashtag Me Too issues and everything, and how common it is apparently that, you know, men just force themselves on women in this way, even if it's like, you know, this Tony situation where he's sort of presenting it not as like a forceful I'm gonna dominate you thing, but just like, no, I'm overwhelmed with passion, don't you get it? Don't you think that's like a beautiful thing? I have so much passion for you
in my wiener.
And he plants this, like, very, you know, solid kiss on her, you know, lingering, very emotional.
Yeah.
And
that's where we get the other Tony.
Right.
Tony wants to show her the second Tony.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I guess, kinder, gentler Tony that she is not aware of. And it's so funny, too, that he backs off, as he says, for the respect of the office, which he has never respected her office ever.
Yeah.
She had to buy a new coffee table and probably a new tissue dispenser. I'm just saying, he's destroyed things in her office before.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, maybe she tacked it on to his, you know, weekly bill or whatever. Who knows?
Maybe.
But yeah, we get the key line, you know, here, right? With the two Tonys. And yeah, by the way, I, you know, after talking to Frank, I was listening for this and I definitely noticed Gandolfini say soprano. So I was like, all right, I guess that's how they do it.
I mean, that's fine. That's fine. I think soprano is fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It's just a personal choice, really.
Yeah. We personally chose to call our podcast The Sopranos Show.
Yeah.
Because we're from California.
Exactly. And we should leave it that way. I believe. Yeah.
So we get a little moment here of little Paulie on bear duty, but too scared to really stay outside, taking every opportunity to go inside and just sit on the toilet. Which I thought, yeah, I'd do that too. AK or not, I'm not going to sit out there with a gun waiting for a bear.
Yeah, exactly. No. I mean, it's a little less of a dramatic, you know, picture. As I liked Carmela's line earlier with Benny, like, you know, you don't have to sit out there like a fistful of dollars. You know, it's very much that kind of like image of, yes, the man defending the homestead with his rifle.
Right.
But it's not really necessary, honestly. It's yeah, you know, he's being a bit prudent, just sitting on the pot watching for the bear.
That's true. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
From there to Melfi with Kupferberg. And I'm so happy that in the fifth season, we're still getting a little Elliot Kupferberg. Mm-hmm. And he's being so blunt here when he says,
I don't want to paint in somber tones here, but the man is a sociopath, unpracticed in not getting what he wants. And now, since the therapy is kaput, what use are you to him except for sex?
Thank you, Elliot. Your depth of feeling is really quite extraordinary here.
Yeah, she kind of does explain all the ugliness that she has seen through the years of therapy with him. It's not a turn on. It's definitely a turn off for her. Sexually, yeah, she might be attracted to him. Mm-hmm. But she knows who he is.
Yeah.
She can't.
Over the years, yeah. Right. And I think that that is a nice shading. That's a nice dimension. Because obviously she had this erotic dream about Tony. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, like, yeah, she's never going to sleep with Tony and will never consider seriously being with him in any way other than, you know, as his doctor.
There's a good button here too. Just when she doesn't know what it is about the mutual sympathy, Kupferberg says, it's probably just an Italian thing.
Right. In our next scene, a bit of a Chris getting pulled into the principal's office scene. He sits down with Tony at the Bing. And Tony's like, okay, so what happened with Paulie the other night? Like, you didn't pay? Like, you chiseled him, as Paulie put it? Chris tries to explain himself, but Tony cuts him off, and he's like, look, this is just the way it goes. It's tradition. You're the young guy. You pay for the dinners. When I was in your position, I did the same, and it was a huge financial burden for me.
That's just Benihana's.
Yeah. And, you know, he throws out some names, some of which we recognize, some of which we don't. Yeah. But, yeah, the point is, look, this is just the way it is when you're at your level. You're not going to be at that level forever. Someone's going to pay for your dinners one day. And, you know, what can Chris really say?
Yeah, that's true. And so with that talking, hopefully Chris learns something by the next scene when all the guys are out in Atlantic City.
Right.
But, of course, it can only be made worse by Paulie intentionally packing it on.
Yes.
Just pound for pound, he just does not care. He's giving Cristal to ugly bitches.
Yeah.
He's Johnny Sacks ordering an extra lobster tail for his wife. It's just, he's just there to taunt the shit out of Christopher.
Yeah, because he knows that Chris has been put in his place. He knows that Tony laid down the law. So, yeah, now it's Polly's turn to flex a little bit.
Yeah.
And, yeah, as you said, just pile it on in the most obnoxious way that he possibly can.
Yeah. And then
and Chris stews.
Right. And then in the meantime, Tony has a conversation with Syl that this friendship that he has, this platonic relationship with a woman, is really driving him crazy because he knows it's more than that.
Yeah.
But I just love Silvio here because he doesn't understand how Tony can have a friendship with a woman.
Right.
What does that even look like?
Yeah.
Who is this woman?
Who could this possibly be?
Right.
Yeah. And it's also just funny that Syl as consigliere is kind of, you know, fulfilling that role for this issue.
Yeah.
You know, normally it's about,
right,
you know, aspects of the mob and, you know, yeah, preparing for war and, yeah, you know, disputes of a high stakes nature.
Yeah.
But here he's just a friend. He's, yeah, just a pal. They're just two guys talking about woman drama.
Yeah.
So after the conversation, we get back to the table and it's just Polly and Christopher. And then Polly just really rubs it in Chris's face when the bill comes and it's $1,184. Chris like winces, clearly like this is going to hurt his pocket pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And Polly basically just laughs in his face. It's like, yeah, you know, I'm going to have to play that number later. I'm going to go wash up. Right. It's just so great.
Yeah.
Just shitting on Chris.
And then they take it outside. Polly's still egging him on. Mm-hmm. And Christopher's had enough of it. And this could seriously, you know, it could boil over to fisticuffs.
Yeah.
Guns coming out.
Sure.
Who knows?
Sure.
It's interrupted by this poor waiter.
Yeah.
Who had left the bill. And wondering why Christopher only left $16 for a total of $1,200 on, yeah, an $1,184 bill.
Yeah.
And he won't stop this guy, even after a warning of legitimate violence to him from Christopher. The guy's like, no, you guys are assholes. Fuck you.
Yeah. He just clearly doesn't know who he's dealing with, though.
And that's when you get a brick to the back of your head.
Yeah, direct hit by Christopher. The guy goes down twitching.
Yeah, this moment is, it's just so scary because the guy's like, I got a family.
Right.
And now he's twitching on the ground and what can you do? But Polly pulls out a gun and kills him.
Yeah, puts him out of his misery. I like some of the dialogue here. Like Chris is like, don't they have like medicine they're supposed to take, these assholes?
Right.
He's still going. And Polly just euthanizes the guy.
Right. He's fucked up.
Yeah. And then, of course, after the guy is killed, I mean, I feel like this whole situation, this is one of the great kind of moments of just unexpected violence in The Sopranos, you know?
And, yeah.
It's truly dark humor.
Yeah.
I mean, this poor guy, it's a horrific thing that has just happened, but it is kind of just played for laughs.
It is.
And, both Polly and Christopher, you know, they run and of course they recover the bill, which is great. And then,
right,
you know, Chris adds, that's my money, Polly.
Yeah.
And, they just drive off and get away with it.
Yeah. And here we still get some information about Carmine not being awake yet in the hospital. Everybody's wondering what the outcome is going to be. We still don't know.
And we have little Carmine, you know, distraught as a son would be.
Right.
And he's being comforted by Johnny Sack, who inside of his mind is like, just die already.
Right.
Just die, old man.
Right.
So,
yeah,
we move from there.
We move from there to Polly and Christopher burying the hatchet,
which is sort of like a jokey kind of punchline to that horrible thing that we just saw. So it took a murder for these two guys to decide to bury the hatchet and bond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is how it boils down in my mind. Their dialogue here just speaks volumes to how like petty it all is.
Mm-hmm.
When he says,
you get some sleep?
A little, you know.
Fucked up, huh?
What are you gonna do?
That's it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, what are you gonna do? You had to kill the guy.
Right.
But, you know, it was fucked up, but alas.
Better him than them, though. Right. Yeah, this right. guy was kind of the sacrificial lamb.
Yeah.
And it wound up saving their friendship and maybe one of their lives. And they decide to split the bill from then on. And yeah, just the kind of like sensitive nature of their conversation. Like, I'm sorry, kid. I'm sorry too, Polly.
Right.
You know, it's because, just funny.
Christopher is part of Polly's crew, right?
Is it? You know, I honestly don't know the technical details.
Because when Polly was in prison, Christopher took over as temporary.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
I think he is. Mm-hmm. And because Polly's always kind of kept him under his wing. Mm-hmm. Or I should say, his wings.
Yeah. Nice.
Thank you.
Hair reference.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, we really do get here to our climactic scene, the confrontation between Tony and Melfi here. I love that we open with this boring group session and that this random goth chick gets a line in.
Right.
She's going to be gone next week, guys. Yeah. So don't expect her in next week's episode.
Just in case.
Yeah, she's not going to be wondering. Here. But Tony confronts Melfi with tickets to Bermuda.
Yeah.
Really took up that let's get dinner game to a next level.
That's what happens when a woman rejects you twice. Just it's because you haven't been trying. You haven't been going big enough.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So just come back even bigger with
stolen
tickets to a getaway in which the only other person she'll be able to interact with is you,
right?
For days at a time.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's pretty intense.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, Tony can't take rejection. Elliot pointed that out.
Mm-hmm.
And it leads to Melfi revealing that she wants to leave the possibility of him returning to therapy open. That's one reason.
Mm-hmm.
That's at least one reason for her, is that they can't be together so that they can try to get him back into therapy.
Right.
But for him, that's not it.
Right. Well, she also gives him a very final and very firm rejection. Mm-hmm. You know, at this point, she just lays it down. Look, it's not going to happen. Don't ask ever again. You can't break through. There's literally nothing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing you can try or say. This isn't going to happen. I'm not going out with you.
Right.
And then we get that switch.
Yeah.
In Tony, you know, the two Tonys, right? So he goes from that other Tony
to
the Tony that we know is the real Tony.
Right.
And I love this. And, you know, I was thinking when you were talking about Gandolfini's eyes and what he does with his eyes, just I loved how his expression changed when he decides, when he knows that he's lost. And he decides that he's going to goad Melfi into admitting that the reason why mm-hmm. she's not going to go out with him is ultimately because she judges him as a human being.
Right.
And so he's like, oh, all right. Okay. I see. And you can just see it come over his face.
Yeah.
And he's going to make her say it out loud so that he can respond the way he wants to respond.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think either prior to that moment or after it, just great dialogue here. He says,
I don't think you get this. I want you.
And that's very flattering to me.
I'm not interested in flattering you.
I know you're not.
Ooh.
Going back to what Elliot said, right? Like, what use could you be except for sex?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So she does lay out all the things she doesn't respect about him, which mm-hmm. is basically his human nature.
The fact that he is a criminal and a thug and uses brutality to achieve his goals.
Yeah, I will say, too, it's interesting to hear this from Melfi, because typically we hear her in a therapeutic sense kind of trying to paint this for Tony. But now she's just being a normal person,
mm-hmm.
not a therapist.
Right.
Laying all this out.
Right.
Which is also a little, probably a lot more difficult for Tony to take in.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah, but again, I think that he sort of wants her to say this. He wants her to be blunt.
Yeah.
So that he can in turn be very blunt.
Yes.
As blunt as one can be.
Right.
Cuts her off with fuck you.
Yep.
Which shocks her into silence.
Yes.
And he doesn't advance. He goes in the opposite direction. Storms out with one of the key great lines of the series as he's going down the hallway.
Fucking cunt!
Yeah.
Which is such a shocking moment, you know, just for Tony to flat out say that to Melfi.
Yeah. But we do move into the final moments of the episode, because from there, feeling frustrated, nowhere else to go at this moment, but to his home to guard his family from the bear.
Yeah.
The bear is returning.
And I love this last shot here, because second time I'll reference it, when Carmela mentioned A Fistful of Dollars, this last image is very much Fistful of Dollars, archetypal old school masculinity. He's got the cigar,
yeah,
dead of night, leather jacket, you know, rifle resting against, you know, the chair, and he just kind of looks out into the night.
Yeah.
You know, and he's waiting, he's ready. Yeah. And that is the end of the episode. We get back to our country song. One thing I wanted to mention, because we talked about this, you know, premiere of season 4, Carmela said everything comes to an end. We forgot to mention in White Caps that was very directly paid off in White Caps.
That's right. That's right.
Good. Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, it did. Well, that does it for this episode of The Sopranos Show. I'm Gavin Bowen.
Soprano Show. No, I'm just kidding. And I'm Hannibal Diaz.
Join us next week. But until then, if you're enjoying the podcast and you want to support it, there are many ways to do that: by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, all over the place, leaving a review, 5 stars, a comment. We'd love to hear from you on Facebook or Twitter at The Soprano Show. But like we do with every episode, we end with our favorite line. Hannibal, do you have a favorite line from this episode?
Yeah, I did. And it was actually a pure throwaway. And
oh, great.
I usually steer towards more symbolic lines, I guess.
Yeah.
But this one was just a joke, and it really made me laugh out loud for whatever reason. Silvio, when he's at the table, and I think it opens, the scene opens with him saying,
"This friggin' olive oil, the food's drenched. That's the reason it happened."
Yeah. As he's wiping off his tie.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it just reminded me of something that like I would probably say. So I love that line.
That's good. Mine actually was at the top of the scene when Christopher goes to the principal, Tony, to get a scolding. It starts off where Christopher says,
"This about the Easter baskets?
I don't even know what that is. And I tell you the truth, I don't want to know.
I want to know. I want to know what the Easter baskets are. What is that all about?"
Yeah, that was a great line. Great reference. And spoiler alert, it will never be paid off.
What could be so bad about Easter baskets that Chris is in trouble for? I don't know. It's just, that stood out to me. We're just like, oh, funny.
Yet another one of the great Sopranos mysteries.
Yes, on The Sopranos.